So it begins. This thing is finally getting underway, isn't it? Is it? 2012, the circus will soon begin. Hey, greetings, truth seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow occupying your airwaves once again. Yes, they've dragged me out from behind bradblog.com to sit in for Mike Malloy, who's enjoying a few days off here, much deserved. He'll be back with you, of course, in the new year. He'll even be back Monday. Most people will be taking a holiday, but Mike will be back on Monday because he cares. And oh, because he knows that up there in the Bay Area, you folks up there in San Francisco aren't going to be able to hear him live after Monday. So he wants to come and say hello, because they're, or say goodbye, I guess, because they're moving the Mike Malloy Show till the middle of the night up there at Green 960 in San Francisco. If you don't like that, by the way, just, you know, give a friendly call to the folks at Green 960 and be polite and say, hey, we don't like that. We want our Mike Malloy. Everyone else in America, you got your Mike Malloy, but you got me, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, sitting in for him tonight. Glad you could join us. We got a big show ahead of you. Let's get some of the business out of the way before I get to, wait until you... Someone's going to have to alert Fox News. You're going to want to write down this address, voterfraud@foxnews.com. That's the address that they've asked citizens to let them know when you learn about voter fraud in this country. Fox News wants to know about it. They're on top of it. They want to hear about it at voterfraud@foxnews.com. Write that down, because I have got an explosive case of voter fraud to tell you about. Thousands and thousands of cases of voter fraud that Fox News is going to want to know about. So get ready, because you're going to want to help them find out. Our phone number tonight, whenever I can get to it, will be 877-520-1150. In case you want to write that down, I know in the third hour we're going to take nothing but your phone calls. If I can get to your phone calls before the third hour, I will try. Let's see. Oh, yes, we can be tweeted at The Brad Blog. I'll do my best to pay attention there. The Brad Blog. And what else? Oh, please stop by the bradblog.com chat room, where everyone is already piling in here for the end of the year fun. For Earth is in there. Dez is in there. I think Jeannie Dean is in there, all moderating and helping you in the door. Come on by. Stop on by. Say hello. It's a lot of fun in there. I guarantee you. And coming up a little bit later in the show, we're going to be hearing from Spencer Mills, otherwise known as Oak Fauchot, to a lot of you folks out there who follow the Occupy movement. He is one of the great, I'll go ahead and say it, one of the legendary citizen journalist, live web streamers from up in the, speaking of the Bay Area, from up there in Oakland. And he was down here a few weeks ago when Occupy LA was raided by the LAPD. And, we're going to check in with him, because what happened to him that night was, I think, extraordinary. And happily, it was caught on videotape. And a fellow by the name, an LAPD officer by the name of Officer Escamilla, has some splaining to do. I will fill you in on what all of that coded discussion means in a little while. We're also going to be joined in studio by Cheryl Eichley and Lawrence Zeiss, both Occupy LA folks who were detained by the police. Again, when was that? October? I've already lost the date. When they raided the, it was September 28th, 29th? We'll figure that out. When they raided City Hall, threw people in jail, detained them on buses for hours, forcing them in many cases to urinate on themselves, shackling them and forcing them to kneel on concrete for 7 or 8 hours. That's otherwise known as torture. And, of course, there has been, as far as I can tell, no accountability whatsoever to what the LAPD did that night out here in Los Angeles several weeks ago. going to try to bring help move along some accountability to these folks, to these Los Angeles police officers, and discuss some of the ordeals of some of the occupiers and what they had to go through. One of them that we're going to talk to was held in jail for 10 days. And you know what the charges were at the end of those 10 days? Nothing. All charges dismissed. All right, we're going to talk about that. And, oh, yeah, then there's this other thing that's going on in, Iowa or something. I've been following it. Some of the other media has been covering. Let's see. What are they covering there on CNN? There we go. Oh, it's the Iowa caucuses. Oh, there we go. Yeah, the Iowa caucuses are going to be going on less than just days from today, Tuesday. Up there in the Hawkeye State. All right, turn it off, turn it off. That's circus. Caucus. I said caucus, not circus, Tony. Let's get that straight. I didn't say circus. I said Iowa caucus. Got that? Iowa caucus. All right. Now we're... Yeah, okay, now don't even think about it. Because okay. Anyway, voter fraud, I wanted you guys to know about. This is remarkable. Just absolutely remarkable. And remember, Fox News wants to know about it whenever there is, whenever you see voter fraud. They want to hear about it at voterfraud@foxnews.com. This just broke. Well, last Friday when I was on the show, I told you that Rick Perry did not submit enough signatures to enough valid signatures to get on the ballot, the primary ballot up there in Virginia on Super Tuesday. He could not come up with 10,000 valid signatures in the state of Virginia. Well, after we got off the air late Friday night, we got the news that Newt Gingrich also couldn't get enough signatures to get on the ballot in Virginia. Virginia, his home state. This is extraordinary. All that you need is 10,000, but Newt Gingrich couldn't come up with enough. Well, we've learned a few more details about those 10,000 signatures that that Newt Gingrich could not get in the state of Virginia, his home state, where you know they know him best. And the people who know him best didn't want him apparently on the ballot in Virginia in the Republican primary. Anyway, what we have learned is, thanks to Newt's own admission, Newt Gingrich has committed thousands and thousands of acts of voter fraud all by himself. We're talking some 1,500 counts of voter fraud committed by Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. Republican Newt Gingrich has committed voter fraud. Thousands and thousands incidents. And I guess this is the first act of voter fraud in the 2012 election. Let me explain. Should I explain or should we go to a break here, Tony? It's a good point to go to a break. Okay. Well, I'll just leave this. We'll take a quick break, come back, and I will explain Newt Gingrich's voter fraud and how he has committed thousands of counts of it in the state of Virginia that Fox News is going to want to know about. And other than that, I'm going to prove to you tonight in this first hour that Republican polling place photo ID restriction laws have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud. They don't care about voter fraud, and the Republicans all know it. Brad, in for Mike Malloy, lots straight ahead. Man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Yes. Talking to you, Newt Gingrich. Change your evil ways. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. Explaining to you this hour why it is that Republican polling place photo ID restriction laws have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud. And Republicans know it. And I will prove that to you in this hour. But before I get to there, speaking of voter fraud, yes, Newt Gingrich committed massive voter fraud in the state of Virginia. As CNN and Talking Points memo reported last night, quote, Newt Gingrich, who failed to make it onto the ballot in Virginia, is alleging that fraud on the part of one of the signature collectors is to blame. Report, this is from CNN, quote, we hired someone who turned in false signatures. We turned in 11,100. We needed 10,000, and 1,500 of them were by one guy who, frankly, committed fraud, Gingrich said to a woman in Algona, Iowa. Algona? In any case, he admitted that 1,500 of them were fraudulent as they were turned in. These are the signatures that Newt Gingrich needed. He only needed 10,000 to get onto the primary ballot in Virginia. However, 1,500 of them were fraudulent. He says they were by one guy. Now, if we use the Republican Party Fox News standard for determining what voter fraud is, it is clear that Newt Gingrich himself has committed massive voter fraud in the state of Virginia. Why? Well, because you may remember, for years and years, Fox and the Republican Party have been telling you that Acorn committed thousands of cases of voter fraud. Of course, Acorn committed zero cases of voter fraud. In fact, there is not a single case of a fraudulent vote being cast via any improper Acorn voter registration. Now, some of Acorn's workers, a very small handful out of the tens of thousands of workers, a very small handful did commit voter registration fraud by filling out these registration forms themselves because they thought they needed to do that to get paid. However, Acorn discovered that the workers had done that. They flagged those fraudulent registrations as fraudulent and then turned them into officials with that flag that said they were fraudulent. Acorn did that with their own quality control because they, Acorn, was being defrauded by these Acorn workers, these few Acorn workers who did this. The same way that Newt Gingrich appears to have been defrauded, if we can believe him, appears to have been defrauded by one of his workers who turned in 1,500 fraudulent signatures to put him on the ballot in the state of Virginia. And yet, when Acorn did it, you may recall, I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure you've heard it on Fox News. I'm sure you've heard Republican elected officials lying about this, telling you that Acorn committed voter fraud. And we have evidence because thousands of registrations have been turned in and they were fraudulent. And therefore, Acorn committed voter fraud. No, Acorn did not commit voter fraud. Some of Acorn, some of Acorn's workers committed voter registration fraud, but not voter fraud. And those incidents of voter registration fraud were turned in to officials by Acorn themselves, who asked for these Acorn workers, these rogue workers, to be brought to justice, who asked for them to be prosecuted. Newt Gingrich, on the other hand, apparently didn't bother to verify any of these signatures before he turned in 1,500 of them that were fraudulent. And again, if we go by Fox News standards, this means Newt Gingrich committed massive voter fraud in the state of Virginia. And I think everyone listening ought to let Fox News know about it because they pretend like they're really concerned about voter fraud. And so much so, so concerned are they that they created an email address, a special email address. That address is voterfraud@foxnews.com. When you hear about incidents of voter fraud, they want to know about it. So please, by all means, let them know. That's voterfraud@foxnews.com. Let them know that Newt Gingrich has been caught committing thousands of acts of voter fraud in the state of Virginia. He joins, of course, many luminaries before him, Ann Coulter actually did commit voter fraud on her own. Real voter fraud, not Fox News made up voter fraud, but actual real voter fraud. She did that. So did the Republican Secretary of State, the Republican Secretary of State of Indiana, Charlie White, who has been ordered removed from office by a circuit court judge because he committed voter fraud and was therefore not legitimately on the ballot when he became the Secretary of State last November in 2010. He's been ordered removed from office. Separately, Charlie White faces 7 felony charges, 3 of them for voter fraud. This, by the way, is the chief election official in the state of Indiana, the state of Indiana that was the first to pass a photo ID restriction on voters that would be approved at the Supreme Court. Yes, the Secretary of State of that state, Indiana, the Hoosier state, has been ordered removed from office thanks to his own voter fraud. But you see, the thing is, as we head into 2012 and into the Iowa caucuses up there next Tuesday, the thing is that you have to remember that Republicans don't actually care about voter fraud. Their photo ID restrictions have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud. It is meant to keep you from voting. No matter what they tell you, it is meant to keep people who tend to vote Democratic, you know, the elderly, minorities, students, people who don't have the photo ID that is now required in many of these states where Republicans have passed these laws. It's to keep you from voting. And that's going to play a huge part in the 2012 election. I guarantee it. But not only is it not meant to prevent voter fraud, it's not meant to prevent voter fraud, and Republicans know it. And they're lying to you about it when they tell you otherwise. They know this has nothing to do with voter fraud. And this hour on the Mike Malloy Show, I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, will prove it to you. Stay with us. You're listening to the Malloy Show.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore. And is not worth fighting for.
Fighting for your vote. Each and every one of your votes. Fighting to make sure that you can vote if you want. Fighting to make sure that your vote gets counted if you decide to vote. And that it gets counted in a way that we can all know that it has been counted. People who know me, I'm Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, in for Mike Malloy tonight. People who know me know that I cover this year-round, not just when the elections begin. But they are about to begin. We are just days away from the very first votes being cast up there in the Iowa caucus. And the not circus, the Iowa caucus. I know it's very confusing, Tony, but it's the Iowa caucuses. All right, that's... Anyway, voting is about to begin up in the Hawkeye State. See? Okay. Up in the Hawkeye State next Tuesday. And this stuff is going to matter big time, because as these Republican photo ID bills have been passed all over the country, people are going to be denied their right to vote under the guise of staving off voter fraud. But of course, when it comes to voter fraud, when it comes to polling place voter fraud, when it comes to in-person impersonation at the polling place, which these photo ID laws are supposed to be about, that's what they're supposed to prevent, well, it doesn't happen. People don't go to the polling place, say they're someone else, and then vote. It just doesn't happen. Even the George W. Bush, his own Justice Department, could not find one case of in-person voter fraud impersonating at the polling place. So These photo ID restriction laws are meant not to prevent voter fraud, but to keep you from voting. At least that is if you are elderly, if you are a student, if you are a minority, if you are someone who votes for Democrats more than Republicans. They don't want you to vote, and they will do whatever they can here to stop you from voting, and that's what they're doing with these laws that we hope will be turned back. But the Republicans not only are trying to keep you from voting, they're claiming that it's voter fraud, but they know it's not. They know it is not, and I will prove that to you this hour. They know that they are lying to you about voter fraud. We've talked in the past, as I've been on the Malloy show here, we've talked about 84-year-old Ruth L. Frank, who may have to pay some $200 in order to cast her vote up in Wisconsin, where the Republicans up in Wisconsin have instituted one of these insidious anti-American, anti-small d democratic photo ID restriction laws. Ruth L. Frank doesn't have a photo ID because she's never had a driver's license, because she's never driven. Nonetheless, she's been able to vote without a problem since 1948, but she was born at home without a birth certificate. So in order for her to get a photo ID, she needs to show a birth certificate. They're giving them away for free. That's what they tell you. Oh, the IDs are free. How hard can that be to get? Well, if you don't have a driver's license, it's hard to get it. But even if you can make your way to the DMV to get a free photo ID, you have to show your birth certificate. But Ruth L. Frank was born at home. She has no birth certificate. So to get one made, because her name is in the Registry of Deeds, to get one made, she'll have to pay $20. Well, that's good. It'll cost her $20 to cast her vote next year in the Badger State up there in Wisconsin. But there's a problem because the Registry of Deeds has her name, but there's several typos in it. Therefore, even if she pays $20 to have her birth certificate made, she won't be able to use it to vote unless she changes what is in the Registry of Deeds, which will cost upwards of $200 to cast her vote. Ruth L. Frank, 84 years old in the state of Wisconsin. Thankfully, that is being challenged now by the ACLU up there in Wisconsin, who is fighting for all of our rights to vote. Ruth L. Frank is the lead plaintiff in their case, charging that this is unconstitutional. A suit that has been filed now in federal court. And if it is successful, it could well undo all of these photo ID restriction laws around the country. We may talk about that more tomorrow with Ernie Canning from the Brad blog, who has been writing about that specifically, that case up there in Wisconsin. So we've talked about her. We've talked about 96-year-old Dorothy Cooper, who is fighting to vote under Tennessee's new voter suppression law. She's 96 years old. She's African-American. She was born before women had the right to vote at all. She's been voting in virtually every election for the last 70 years without a problem. Even before the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the Jim Crow era in the South, she was able to vote without a problem until now. Why? Well, she has a birth certificate, so she can go get one of those free photo IDs. As a matter of fact, she tried to. She made her way to the DMV, 96-year-old Dorothy Cooper. She showed them her birth certificate. She showed them all sorts of documentation to prove that she is who she says she is. However, she couldn't find her marriage certificate. And since she got married somewhere along the way during her 96 years, her name has changed. It's now different from what's on her birth certificate. So she was denied a free, quote-unquote, free photo ID, just like some 500,000 legal and largely Democratic-leaning voters in the state of Tennessee. Yeah, we talked about her. You see these laws that I mentioned? These laws have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud, and Republicans know it, and I will prove that to you in this hour. Then there's 93-year-old Thelma Mitchell, also from Tennessee. She cleaned up the state capitol for 30 years, including the governor's office, for 30 years. She was told that she will not be able to vote because her old state ID is now expired. when she went to get one of these free IDs, she was told that she might be an illegal immigrant. You see, she was born by a midwife in Alabama in 1918. She never had a birth certificate. So she's having trouble now getting her new free photo ID under the anti-American, anti-small-d Democratic Republican photo ID law that has been passed in the state of Tennessee. Shamefully. Now, someone in the House Republican caucus said that, oh, Mitchell was mistaken. She can vote. Just because her ID is expired, she can still vote. Well, there's some confusion about that. And if she was confused, this woman who worked at the state capitol for 30 years, who's known by all the lawmakers, known by the governor personally, if she's being told that her photo ID is no longer valid as a way to vote, how many other people are being confused by this law? And oh, by the way, someone actually bothered to check the law, and the law says that you have to have a valid photo ID. Well, is an ID that has been expired, is that valid anymore? I don't know. If you're pulled over by a cop and he asks for your driver's license and it is expired, is that a valid driver's license? How many people are going to be turned away by these laws that have been put in place by Republicans who are lying about the reason, who are lying about it, telling you that it has something to do with preventing voter fraud, which it doesn't, and Republicans know it, as I will prove in this hour of the Mike Malloy Show. So 93-year-old Thelma Mitchell is having trouble voting. 96-year-old Dorothy Cooper. 84-year-old Ruth L. Frank, and we are just beginning to hear about these cases. We're going to hear a lot more as this election season continues. We're going to hear about other Americans. We're even going to hear about Republicans who have trouble voting this year. And their own party doesn't give a damn about it. So, no. These photo ID restriction laws have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud, and Republicans know it. By the way, that Indiana Secretary of State, Charlie White, Indiana, the first state to pass a photo ID restriction law and see it approved by the Supreme Court. Charlie White, who committed voter fraud, he did it in 2010, 2 years after they instituted the photo ID law in the state of Indiana. And yet, it didn't catch him, did it? It didn't catch Charlie White. It didn't keep him from committing voter fraud. The voter fraud that he has now been told, because he committed it, he needs to be removed from office. Federal judge says the Secretary of State in Indiana, the chief election official, needs to be removed from office. Where is Fox News yelling about this? Where is Fox News yelling about Indiana's Secretary of State, the chief election official in the state, in the first state to pass a photo ID restriction law? Where is Fox News yelling about the voter fraud that was committed by the Secretary of State? Let them know about it. VoterFraud@FoxNews.com. Why aren't they screaming for the Indiana Secretary of State to be thrown in jail the way they're screaming for Democrats to be thrown in jail when they haven't committed voter fraud? Where are the outcries? Where are the screams to defund Newt Gingrich for thousands of cases of voter fraud that he admits to committing voter fraud, at least by the Fox News standard, that he now admits to committing up there in the state of Virginia? Why hasn't he been defunded the way Acorn was? Huh? Why hasn't Congress passed any laws? So there is some pushback beginning. Happily, the Department of Justice is finally taking this up a bit in at least one state, South Carolina. We talked about it last Friday, and maybe soon in Texas. There are other states that aren't covered by the Voting Rights Act, at least not by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, but South Carolina is. And in South Carolina, where Mitt Romney is furious because Eric Holder rejected South Carolina's discriminatory photo ID restriction. Yes, the DOJ found that it was racially discriminatory. And they also found that it wouldn't stop any fraud. This is from the letter that the DOJ sent to South Carolina last Friday when they rejected their photo ID voter suppression law. They said, the state's, quote, the state's submission did not include any evidence or instance of either in-person voter impersonation or any other type of fraud that is not already addressed by the state's existing voter identification requirement and that arguably could be deterred by requiring voters to present only photo ID at the polls. They did not put forward a single instance of photo ID, a voter fraud that would be stopped by photo ID. At the same time, by South Carolina's own numbers, it turns out that minority registered voters are 20% more likely to lack DMV-issued ID than white registered voters and thus to be effectively disenfranchised. So the DOJ found South Carolina's law to be racially discriminatory, therefore in violation of the Voting Rights Act, and they rejected it. Now, South Carolina has promised to somehow appeal that decision. And at the same time, Mitt Romney has come out and said it's outrageous. He completely disagrees with the DOJ. He completely disagrees with Eric Holder that photo ID in South Carolina can't be required to cast his vote. And there were some reports of that, some reports of Mitt Romney saying that he disagreed. But no media bothered to ask him, well, Governor Romney, which part of the letter from the Department of Justice to South Carolina do you disagree with? Nobody bothered to ask him because our media, our corporate mainstream media, is crap. So if someone up there in Iowa comes across Mitt Romney, just go ahead and ask him, which part of the Department of Justice's letter to South Carolina do you disagree with? He won't be able to answer because he doesn't know, because he didn't read it, because he's a liar, and he's willing to say anything he can to become president of the United States. And by the way, Republican polling place photo ID restrictions have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud, and Republicans know it. And I will prove that to you right here on The Molloy Show when we come back after this break. Brad in for Molloy. Manic depression is capturing my soul. Welcome back. Oh, the party, the Republican Party, who wants to undermine. Listen, when it comes to election integrity, I will fight for every Republican. And you know what? I'm going to be Newt Gingrich's best friend, Ron Paul's best friend, Rick Santorum's best friend, if they have problems with the election system, with the voting machines. In whether it's in Iowa, up at the caucus up there that's about to go on next Tuesday, or anywhere else, New Hampshire, the whole circus. I will be there I will be there fighting for them. But for those people who are fighting to keep people from voting, no, I will not be fighting for those people. I will be fighting against them. And in this case, they happen to be Republicans who are doing this. And Republicans don't care about voter fraud. If they did, they would be all over Fox News yelling and screaming for the Indiana's Republican Secretary of State to step down since he was found by a judge to have committed voter fraud and should have never been on the ballot in 2010. They know that their photo ID restrictions have nothing to do with preventing voter fraud. How do I know this? How can I prove this to you? Well, because next Tuesday in Iowa, the voting begins. Now, up there in the Iowa caucuses, the Republicans set their own rules. This is not run by the state. It's not the state election board. It's run by the Republicans themselves. They set all the rules. They decide how people will vote, who gets to vote, and everything else. Now, earlier this year, Republicans in the state House passed a photo ID restriction bill up there in Iowa, that was sponsored by the Republican Secretary of State. Thankfully, it was killed in a Senate committee. But once again, the folks in Iowa claimed, the Republicans in Iowa claimed, they needed this to prevent voter fraud on Election Day. And yet now, their caucuses are next Tuesday, and the Republicans themselves are setting the rules for those caucuses. And guess what? The Republicans themselves are requiring no photo ID to vote in the state of Iowa. Their own voters, their Republican voters, may vote in the state of Iowa, no photo ID necessary. Oh, and by the way, you can also register to vote on the same day. You could register to vote as a Republican and vote on the same day, something that Republicans have fought against allowing anywhere else in the country. But in Iowa, at the caucuses, you can vote, you can register to vote on Election Day and then vote, and you don't have to show a photo ID to do it. No photo ID necessary. I confirmed that this week with the Secretary of State's office up there in Iowa. The spokesman from the Republican Party wouldn't call me back or write me back via email to explain why it is that they're so worried about voter fraud, and yet when they hold their own election, the first in the nation caucus, the all-important Iowa caucus, they don't bother to require photo ID from anyone. And of course, the answer we all know is because they don't give a damn about voter fraud. These laws have nothing to do with voter fraud, and the Republicans know it, and it is simply about keeping Democrats from being able to cast their vote. If they cared about voter fraud, they would require photo ID next Tuesday up there in the Iowa caucus. Some 1,800 caucus sites around the state. But nope, you can walk on in, you can register that day and vote. No photo ID necessary because they know there is no voter fraud. They know that they are the only ones who are committing fraud, committing it on the American people. I'm going to have more to say about this, I suspect, later in the show. And in the third hour, I'll take your calls if you're dubious about any of this. I'd love to hear from you. Coming up next hour, some occupiers are in the house. Brad in from Molloy. Of the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Molloy. He's taking a holiday weekend. Yeah, turn pipe me up a little bit there. We're having some technical. We're trying to pull off a neat technical trick this hour by having tons and tons of occupiers here in the studio with us. Very good. Thanks, Tone. You're listening to the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker and muckraker, once again occupying your public airwaves as we head towards the holiday weekend, as we head towards the Iowa caucuses next week. By the way, we talked a little bit about in the last hour how Republicans are setting their own rules for the Iowa caucus, and yet they're not requiring any voter to show photo ID before voting. Imagine that. The one election that they run, and they're not bothering to require people to use a photo ID to cast a vote. Because why? Well, because they're not really concerned about voter fraud. That's just a scam to keep you from voting. But a bit of good news. I may be able to get into it a little bit more in the third hour. This is actually really good news. The Republicans were concerned about Anonymous apparently hacking the election somehow. So, the bad news is they've moved their tabulation center to an undisclosed location. So nobody will know, where they won't be able to oversee that part of the process. However, they claim that they will be using hand-counted paper ballots at each and every caucus site. That's some 1,800 caucus sites around the state of Iowa. They're going to be voting on a paper ballot and hand-counting them. So they're hand-counting paper ballots at the Iowa caucus, and they're not requiring photo ID. All of the same things they won't allow you to use in the general election around the country. Because around the country, you know, they say, well, you're a Democrat, you don't get to vote. And, oh, you can't use a paper ballot. We're not going to hand count your paper ballot. That's impossible. We couldn't do it. We have to have secret vote counting computers do it. All right. More of that, I suspect, in the next hour. But let me change gears here just a bit. Well, sort of change gears. This is about accountability. And I'm going to be joined here in the studio momentarily by Cheryl Eichley and Lawrence Zies, two occupiers who were arrested out here several weeks ago at City Hall in Los Angeles. But before I bring them in here, I have been... I've gotten to know a little bit a great citizen journalist. I'm going to call him legendary citizen journalist, Spencer Mills, who's otherwise known as Oak Faux Show, out there on the Twitters and at oakfauxshow.com. He's from the Bay Area, hopefully up there listening on Green 960 before Mike Malloy disappears as of January 3rd. Well, goes into the wee hours and they don't play the third hour. But anyway, for now, we're on live up there in the Bay Area and Oakland. And Spencer Mills, who is a citizen journalist, he was down here in Los Angeles several weeks ago when the LAPD raided the Occupy LA encampment. And he was videotaping the whole thing, broadcasting it to the world. The whole world was watching. And the whole world was watching, or at least I was watching, when an officer from the LAPD pointed a gun straight at Spencer Mills. Before we play the audio, let me bring on Spencer. Hey, here we go. There we go. Hey, Spencer, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. How are you, my friend?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Brad. It's good to be on this evening.
All right, great. Glad to have you here. And I just wanted to touch base on this because I've covered this in the past with you. We've covered it at bradblog.com. We have this video up there for people to see. But I wanted to find out if we've got any accountability for what happened between you and Officer Escamilla. Very quickly, set up what it is that we're about to hear. I'm going to play the audio here. What happened in this moment on, what was the date? I'm already forgetting. September 29th?
I've lost track.
So what happens here? What do we, will we hear in this clip?
Well, basically, I'm filming, I'm live view streaming to the world from the center of the LA encampment there as it was being raided, and I'm just outside the center circle where the vast majority of protesters that wanted to be peacefully arrested were staging and linked in arms, and I'm right outside of a police line, and I'm sitting there filming, and all of a sudden this one officer, Officer Escamilla, basically starts pointing his weapon up at the trees. There's protesters in the trees, and then he just brings it down directly from the trees right at my face. You know, and it was only for a second, but when you have a shotgun pointed at your face, that second feels like an eternity. And, you know, and so basically I informed him that I was not happy with his actions, essentially.
Yes, you did. You did not cower. You informed him you were not happy. You stood up to this, frankly, thuggery. Here is a clip of Spencer Mills, Oak Faux Show, a journalist who has the LAPD cop, Officer Escamilla, who I hope is famous soon, pointing a gun straight at his face on videotape at Occupy LA. And it's a little hard to hear at first, but I think you'll be able to hear Spencer Mills, Oak Faux Show, giving the officer what foe.
Escamilla is pointing his weapon at protesters. That's not necessary. You just pointed your weapon right at me. That's not necessary. That's not necessary. I am worried about it because it's against procedure and it's against code. You're not supposed to do it. So keep your finger off the trigger, please. Thank you. Don't point your weapon at me. It's against procedure and it's against code. I'm a journalist. I'm a procedure.
Yes, he just broke procedure, and Spencer Mills, otherwise known as Okfeshow, was there to hold him accountable that night and to not cower like so many in the corporate media would have. Oh, I'm sorry, officer. I will leave now. Whatever you tell me to do. So, Spencer, this Officer Escamilla, you had filed a complaint with the LAPD because this is not the procedure. These cops are not supposed to be pointing their guns at peaceful journalists, are they?
Well, no, of course not. And, you know, especially not with your finger on the trigger. Basically, what I did was I called in and filed a complaint verbally with LAPD IA, Internal Affairs. I have yet to hear back. I just actually contacted, via email, LANLG, the National Lawyers Guild, to see if they can help me file a complaint. I'm going to be down in Southern California this weekend and through, you know, to cover Occupy the Rose Parade activities. Mm-hmm. And if I haven't heard anything back by then, I'm thinking I'll just probably drive the extra distance down to L.A. and walk into LAPD myself and file it via file it personally by hand.
Bless you, sir. So it's been weeks. You called up and you said, I have an officer who had pointed a gun to me. I'd like to file a complaint, and nobody has called you back. I know it's been more than a month. I'm forgetting the date of the actual raid on Occupy L.A. So, nobody called you back?
No one has gotten back to me. No one has called me. You know, it's disappointing. But again, I mean, apparently they've had 16 complaints filed is what I've heard from folks at OLA. And I don't know if I'm one of them. If they actually took that down as a complaint, but I haven't heard anything back personally from it.
Yeah. And given what we have learned about what happened to some of these occupiers once they were in police custody, I can't believe there's only been 16 complaints. Maybe there are many like yours that they haven't bothered to call back. Spencer Mills, thank you for staying on this, for continuing. I'm glad you're coming down here for the Rose Parade, where the occupiers will, in fact, they have been granted a spot to occupy the Rose Parade this Monday, I guess. Question now is, will the TV media, will the corporate media actually show the Occupy float? They've got a big octopus, apparently, they're going to be using in the Rose Parade, or will they cut away to commercial when the occupiers show up? That remains to be seen. If they do cut away to commercial, however, Spencer Mills, I suspect, will be carrying it all live on his Ustream. And your Ustream, Spencer, is Ustream. Yeah, go ahead.
Ustream.tv/Occupy Oakland, and actually they're going to have the human floats, but it's going to be after the what is technically the last float in the Rose Parade, which is the 43rd float, and there will be a line of four police cars, and then there will be four Occupy the Rose Parade human floats directly behind those police cars. So I don't know if the corporate media is actually going to put them on TV. Nonetheless, there's hundreds of thousands of people that line the route, and every media, or, you know, it's the second largest TV event next to the Super Bowl, so every media organization known to man will be there clicking away and probably taking video, even if it doesn't go out live. So, you know, it's an unmistakable opportunity for the Occupy movement to basically get the word out in a very visual and loud way.
I will look forward to that. Give us a holler once you're down here. Be great to see you again in person, Spencer. Check him out, ustream.tv/Occupy Oakland, and also at his website, okfoshow.com. Is that right?
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Spencer. Keep us up to date. Once you hear from the LAPD, I'm sure they will take care of this problem and bring Officer Escamilla to justice very soon.
Thanks, brother.
Take care. All right, when we come back, a couple of folks who not only had a gun pointed at them, were actually arrested and detained. Their stories are extraordinary. If you thought what happened in L.A. was peaceful when they evacuated City Hall, just wait. Stay tuned. Brad, in for Malloy.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Yeah, that man with the gun
telling me I got to be
That man with the gun may be the LAPD officer, Officer Escamilla, who, as far as I'm concerned, should be the most famous officer in the in Los Angeles right now. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, Brad of bradblog.com. Broadcasting live from the Left Coast and the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150 out here in Los Angeles, which is why we are able to bring you live and in studio a couple of the occupiers, the Occupy LA folks. And, you know, everyone has been worrying about the Iowa caucuses. They're all, oh, this is so important, what's going on up there in Iowa. And it's a crazy circus and everybody is going crazy. And but we're kind of losing sight of things that, you know, actually matter. Like, the inequality, the economic inequality in this country and the people who have been putting their lives on the line. Night and day in many cases for months at a time out at these occupations. Well, 1 month ago out here in Los Angeles, and it was the night of November 29th and the morning of November 30th, the Los Angeles Police Department, ordered by Mayor Villaraigosa, was ordered to clear out City Hall and the occupiers who had been there for, I think, a month by that time. And you had been there for 2 months by that time. Everybody including bradblog.com, gave the LAPD credit for, you know, not beating the crap out of people too much, not spraying too much pepper spray. They didn't use any pepper spray. They didn't use any tear gas. They did fire some rubber bullets. But other than that, they were, pretty much said, oh, well, way to go, Mr. Mayor. You had the police behave well. Well, you know what? After the media left, it turned out that these folks who were detained, hundreds of them, were not treated so well. And I've got a couple of those folks we'll tell their stories here. Lawrence Zeese, he is a top green landscape designer here in L.A. He formed a legal observer program called Peace in Action to help activists confronted by police altercations at Occupy encampments in various cities. He was a legal observer on the night of the Occupy LA raid, and he followed all the instructions of the police when he was then arrested. And we'll find out what the thanks he got for following the instructions were. Lawrence, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I'm also joined by Cheryl Eichley. She's a recent UCLA grad, a national community liaison to Americans for Safe Access, which is a medical marijuana advocate. And she was the last citizen journalist. We just had Oak Fischel. Do you know Oak Fischel, Cheryl?
I'm familiar with him.
You're familiar with him? Well, he was like Oak Fischel. Cheryl is a Ustreamer. She was broadcasting. I was watching your broadcast that night. She was broadcasting from the inner circle at Occupy LA. The folks who were linking arms, ready to be arrested, who had volunteered to be arrested. And as it turns out, Cheryl, you were linking arms with the musician Michelle Schacht.
She was my raid buddy that night.
Your what buddy?
Raid.
Your raid buddy. Did you know her beforehand? Did you know she was going to be there?
Yeah, she had joined the Civic Engagement Committee, which is a committee I had started, and she had been helping with that committee for weeks when she was in town. She actually had to leave a couple of times to tour and such.
I see. And so you mean the people at these occupations are not all unemployed hippies that I had read about? There's people like Michelle Schacht, who has a job, who makes millions of dollars as a recording artist?
I don't know if she makes millions of dollars,
okay.
But... I bet she does.
But she has a job. Okay. And so you guys were there, and we're going to. We've got some audio. Do we have time to play that real quick? We'll clip. Yeah, this is a clip of Cheryl from the Inner Circle at Occupy LA right before the arrest.
Fellow citizens, peaceful citizens, disobey your orders.
I am in the middle of the inner circle. We are surrounded by police and peaceful protesters.
Raise your hand again if you have an unlinked arm. If you are in a circle with an unlinked arm. Again, in the inner circle. Can you right there move into the inner circle? It's a responsibility. It's a big responsibility.
Okay, that was some of the audio there in those moments just before you guys were arrested, before Cheryl Eichley and Lawrence Zeese were arrested. We're going to find out what happened after you guys were arrested. We got a nice big segment after we come back from the break. We're going to get each of your stories of what happened, because some of it is extraordinary. And the fact that there has been so little call for accountability for these officers out here in L.A. Same thing is happening up in Oakland and New York and everywhere else, by the way. But I think these guys in L.A. are kind of getting a free ride. That changes tonight, as far as I'm concerned. You're listening to Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Oh, stop by the chat room, bradblog.com. Love to see you over there. Much more straight ahead. Welcome back. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. We're going to take your calls next hour on anything you want to talk about tonight, whether it's the Iowa caucus, the photo ID nonsense, and the way the Republicans are trying to keep you from voting, any of that, or anything we're talking about this hour, where we're talking about not just Occupy Wall Street and Occupy LA, but accountability. I'm joined in the studio by Lawrence Zeis and Cheryl Eichle, both who were arrested on the night of November 29th, the morning of November 30th, out here in Los Angeles, when everyone thought, oh, the police, they were given great credit because they didn't use tear gas and pepper spray, as we saw up there in Oakland and UC Davis and in New York City and so forth. But what happened after the media left to these folks who were detained is a different story. And we've been hearing a lot of stories from a lot of detainees, although not really in the LA Times. So we're going to put it out here over in the Mike Malloy Show and let you get an idea what happened. Cheryl Eichle, let's start with you, Cheryl. You were in that inner circle. You were volunteering to be arrested. You were linking arms with recording artist Michelle Schacht. And, well, let's take it from there. As you were brought, you were also broadcasting on the web across Ustream, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And, okay, so then what happened? Eventually, they were able to pry you loose and arrest you?
Yeah, before that, I was able to speak out directly to the LA Times and to the Daily News, and they were able to quote me from within the circle, and the LAPD kind of brushed them away or brushed them off and told them, you can't talk to the protesters, you know, you might rile them up. So there was definitely some suppression of media and the press going on. I was also able to speak directly to the mayor, who was about 100 yards away from me, speak out loud to him and tell him of my experience with the occupation and why I was there, and ask him some questions. And at the end of speaking to him, I said, Mayor, did you hear what I had to say to you? Uh-huh. And he nodded his head yes. So,
and this is Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa?
Yes.
Who, what did you ask? What did you ask him? What did you say to him?
What I told him was I had started with the occupation on September 25th, 2011, that I had started the Civic Engagement Committee, mm-hmm. that the LAPD was threatening to arrest us on right before the occupation began, and that myself and another occupier had went to city council and spoke during public comment and let them know that the LAPD were threatening to arrest us for sleeping anywhere near City Hall the next October 1st. And that's when City Council member Richard Alarcon wrote a letter to the chief of police, mm-hmm. to the city attorney, and to the director of general services, which is the police that handled the City Hall grounds. And I asked him why didn't he sign the resolution that the city council had passed on October 12, 2011 in support of us.
Mm-hmm. And the city council in L.A. here was very supportive for a while anyway of the occupiers and of Occupy Wall Street in general, unlike a lot of cities around the country. So he didn't, that city councilman did not sign this
The mayor
resolution.
Did not sign.
The mayor did not.
Sign the resolution that the city council passed unanimously.
And did he give you a reason why he didn't sign it?
He didn't really respond, mm-hmm. to anything that I had said to him or asked him until I asked him if he had heard what I said, and he did nod his head. And I was speaking, yelling out very loudly and very clearly through, yeah. all the chaos and everything. So I was able to, for the first time for me to speak directly to the mayor. I had gone to his office several times during the occupation to speak to somebody in his office.
So he didn't want to talk to you because he didn't want to rile you up the way the press might do. And you know how you occupiers, what happens when you get riled up. Okay, so you end up getting arrested.
Yes.
You go onto a bus and you're handcuffed, I guess, shackled? And
yeah, zip-tied. I was actually able to get my handcuffs off fairly easily. Mm-hmm. Other people were not as lucky, and theirs were cutting off circulation. We had a 79-year-old woman who was arrested with us, and we had told the sheriff deputy who were driving the bus or at the front of the bus that her cuffs were way too tight for her. And the gentleman, the sheriff deputy sitting with the driver, made a very smart comment and said she should have left her 79-year-old at home.
So, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so
this is what this is. And this was 79-year-old Ruth Sarnoff,
yes,
I believe. So she was arrested. She was in the inner circle with you guys?
She was not. I think she was at Kids Village, holding down space in Kids Village.
And she was arrested. 79 years old. How long were you guys on this bus with these cops who were wisecracking at a 79-year-old? I guess she's one of those unemployed hippies, too.
Yeah.
How long were you on that bus before you were?
Well, after he had made that comment to her, the bus mic checked him. I don't know if your listeners understand what mic check is, but it's when somebody calls out a mic check and you repeat what they say.
Right.
And so a variety of us had made comments to the deputy. And my comment to him was that I know the law, that every law enforcement agency in California is required to have a citizen complaint process, that every complaint has to be investigated, and that every complaint stays on an officer's record for 5 years. And actually, one of the city council members had given me his personal cell phone number and email and told me, it's your right to get arrested if you want, but please don't resist.
Right.
And if any officers mistreat you, I want to know, because he had previously told me he could get my complaints in front of Chief Beck. So I had just explained that to the deputy, and everybody was repeating what I had to say.
I see.
And he eventually had apologized when we asked him
You got the cop to apologize.
Yeah, and we were able to, I think, from that sort of dynamic that we created on that bus, is get ourselves off that bus a little bit sooner. One of the ladies on the bus whose cuffs were far too tight actually passed out once we got to the Van Nuys police station.
And how long was that? How long were you on that bus at that point?
I don't know, because they had taken everything from me to tell time.
A half hour?
I think I was arrested somewhere around 2 a.m. and I think we got off the bus somewhere after the sun was coming up, so somewhere after 6 a.m. So
you were 4 hours on this bus?
Yeah.
And this 79-year-old woman was also on the bus for 4 hours handcuffed with you?
Yes.
That's Cheryl Eichley. Lawrence Zeese, you were on a bus as well for quite some time.
Oh, it was a
you?
fun bus.
How long were you on the bus? A different bus than Cheryl, right?
We were on the bus for 7.5 hours, according to our approximations.
7.5 hours, handcuffed.
Yes. Handcuffed. Some very large men actually had damage to what there's one gentleman who had damage to his shoulder. Another gentleman was in tears. We're talking a big, huge buff guy was literally in tears because the pain was so severe.
The pain from what? From the zip ties?
From
the
having
handcuffs?
Zip ties and your hands behind your back and being forced to be sitting into a little middle seat.
For 7 hours.
In an arrest bus. Yeah.
We've heard stories that people on these buses were forced to urinate on themselves.
There were.
Did this happen?
There were both women and men on the bus. We were, of course, more worried about the women because they have more increased chances of getting yeast infections and whatnot. So we were like, can you at least let the women off the bus relieve themselves? Sheriffs, of course, blew us off the entire time. No responses.
So no response. So were you on? Did this actually happen? You saw folks, women who had to relieve themselves in the bus?
Well, because I was arrested in the front. Turning around was not something I could do. I was way too jammed in. But yes, women were revealing. From what I was hearing that they actually did. One woman actually apparently vomited as well.
And we heard the story also from the fella, and I'm forgetting his name now, but he's actually a writer on Fox's Family Guy, who talked about being shackled and brought to a parking garage and forced to kneel for some 7 hours on concrete, which to me sounds a whole hell of a lot like torture.
Guantanamo Bay level.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, straight out of the Kubark book, if you know anything about the history of CIA torture and so forth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so after this treatment, Lawrence, you're in a bus for 7 hours. You're finally checked in. Cheryl, you're in a bus for what we were guessing about 4 hours. Cheryl, you're then booked and you're held for how long? Were you held in the LA County Jail that you were held in?
Oh, I was held at the Van Nuys Jail, so I don't think it was the county jail.
Van Nuys Jail.
I think
okay.
it's a city jail.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually bailed out by Occupy Los Angeles mm-hmm. General Assembly. I'm recovering from a very serious injury, which causes me chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
So going into this, I let them know that I'm not going to do too well in jail mm-hmm. for very long.
Right.
And they were able to bail me out. So I got out after 2 days.
2 days?
Yeah.
You were held in jail for 2 days for peacefully protesting, and you didn't put up a fight, did you?
No, not at all. I didn't get charged with any resisting arrest or anything.
So you were let go early because you had some medical issues. They let you go after only 2 days in jail, and your bail was set at what?
$5,000.
$5,000 for peacefully demonstrating, exercising your First Amendment rights at City Hall, 2 days in jail. Okay, and charges? What are the charges still pending against you?
The charges are still pending against me. The city attorney's office sent me a letter offering me to pay $375 to a corporation called American Justice Associations to take a class on my First Amendment rights and how to be a better American citizen. And my response was due on the 27th of December, and I had asked the National Lawyers Guild if they could get me a little bit more time to uh-huh. respond to this offer. And this offer, if I take the class and pay the money, they won't charge me.
So if you take a class in First Amendment,
yes.
on the First Amendment from a private company and pay this private company $375, here you were exercising your First Amendment rights. Who is the, we don't have time to go into who this private company is, but I will look into them, in the future because I'm interested who is making out like crazy from the First Amendment. All right. And if you took that class, by the way, would your charges be dropped?
My charges would be dropped. right now, my arraignment date is January 6th. So I will be going to court on January 6th.
Okay. Lawrence Zeese, you spent the longest time in jail of all of the occupiers?
I don't know if I spent the longest. I think some people are actually still in
jail. How long
jail.
Were you in jail?
I spent 3 days with the Los Angeles Police Department
uh-huh.
holding facility
uh-huh.
after this wonderful bus ride.
Right.
And then I spent an additional 7 days under the tender care of Twin Towers,
Who's that?
L.A. County Jail.
So you were in the L.A. County General Jail
yes.
for 7 more days. So a total of 10 days
yes.
in custody.
Yep.
Now, this serves you right because you wanted to be arrested. And so you were...
I wanted to be arrested about as much as I want to be
so you did not
sodomized.
Want to, so I see. So you did not want to be arrested.
No.
And yet you followed all the rules. You know, I got to take... Let me take a quick break here. We're going to come
yeah,
back
yeah.
get the rest of your story.
Sure.
That's Lawrence Zeese speaking with him in studio, along with Cheryl Eichle, both in studio. Lawrence was held for 10 days after the raid at Occupy LA. And no, he did not volunteer to be arrested. In fact, he followed all the rules.
Just like I was told as a child.
Just like you were told, and your thanks was being held for 10 days. We're going to find out why that is. Oh, man. This stuff really ticks me off. I got to tell you. And nobody's paying attention. They're paying attention to these jackasses up in Iowa to, you know, running around like idiots. And great Americans like you are putting yourselves on the line for all of us and being treated with taxpayer dollars like this by the LAPD. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned. Much more straight ahead. They got to turn me loose.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
revolution?
Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on your public airwaves. As long as they remain that way. Okay, we're speaking in studio with Cheryl Eichle and Lawrence Zeese, both of whom were arrested on the night of November 29th, 1 month ago, in the morning of November 30th. We've heard from Cheryl. They're out at the Occupy LA at City Hall, peacefully demonstrating, exercising their First Amendment rights. Cheryl Eichle was at the center of the group who had decided to not leave. I think, Cheryl, did you volunteer to get arrested, or you preferred not to? But
I prefer not to say on air that I volunteered to get arrested.
Okay.
Because I still have a criminal case pending.
Okay.
And I don't want anything I say to be used against me.
You volunteered to exercise your First Amendment rights, shall we put it that way?
That night I had access to all five tenets of my First Amendment rights. I redressed my government by mm-hmm. talking to the mayor. I had access to the press. I had access to religious leaders to pray. I had my freedom of speech.
You were the press. You were broadcasting
press,
from
yes.
right there. Yeah.
As and far I as was I'm peacefully concerned, you were, assembling.
Yes. All right. Now, Lauren, and we talked about you were held for two nights, $5,000 bail before you were released. Lawrence, you were on a bus for 7 or 8 hours before you were ever taken off there. Folks are forced. The LAPD was forcing folks to urinate on themselves. Mm-hmm. You were then held in jail for how long?
Total 10 days.
And your bail was set at what?
$23,000.
$23,000. In jail for 10 days, you were not one of the people. You were a legal observer, right? You were not one of the people who had volunteered to be arrested?
Well, I guess the best question to ask, and the one that I am going to be asking quite a few people as this works into litigation, is why was I arrested? I was the only legal observer arrested. I had credentials. It was in the officer's face. I was following all police commands, and I was still arrested. Which in themselves I thought was a huge mistake, because then you throw me into detaining cells with people who are arrested, and I'm sitting there getting their information, taking testimonies, getting all their stories straight.
You were there to help them, I guess.
It was the dumbest thing.
But why
done.
Ostensibly were you arrested? We've only got a minute or two here. Why were you arrested? Did you not follow their directions? What?
That's a good question. At 7:45, uh-huh. they issued – I'm sorry, 1:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
They issued on a very bad loudspeaker saying, everybody in the street will be arrested.
Uh-huh.
Move to the sidewalk or you will be arrested. So we all moved to the sidewalk.
I've heard this story from other people as
and
well
we
who tell the exact same story.
A few people
right?
got arrested on the street, so we stayed there and observed. And then I was communicating with the line officer saying, hey, are we cool? Do we need to move? Are we all
you
right?
You were on the sidewalk.
Yes, communicating with the police, basically okay. doing my job. And at one point, one of them kind of looked at me and kind of said, you should probably go, and kind of using his body language without actually verbalizing anything.
Right.
So I tell the group, okay, everybody, we need to get moving. Let's head towards the next street,
uh-huh.
away from City Hall. And boom, lo and behold, there was police officers on both sides. We got sandwiched in. The women started panicking. They were terrified. Some women were in tears. Some of the men were becoming very loud, and you know, it was a terrifying experience.
And you were on the sidewalk. You did what they told you to do.
I was doing exactly what I was told.
And the thanks was 10 days in jail. Now, you had a prior conviction. Is this why they said that you were 10 days?
I fervently believe that it's a political type situation.
Yeah.
I had a misdemeanor I committed in 1999. Debatable whether I committed it. I actually took a plea bargain.
You were charged with a misdemeanor in 1999, 12 years ago.
I took a plea bargain.
Uh-huh.
I was willing to do all these different steps to have it expunged from my record, including court-mandated classes, which I had finished and filed. There's no way – and they're basically saying I did not file the paperwork. So basically they're saying I did not complete an entire year of classes – which I did.
But you did. And this was finally cleared up as of today.
Yes.
And I've only got about 30 seconds here, so I want to make sure we get – this was cleared up today. And no charges?
Well, it was cleared up by an attorney. And today, actually, to keep it from going on the stand, the plaintiff dropped all charges.
So
because they knew I was going to roast them alive when I got up.
So your charges were dismissed today.
Yes.
After 10 days, $23,000 bail, no charges were actually
–
it was all dismissed. Great. Cheryl Eichle, do you have a website you'd like to point folks towards here?
No, I don't really have a website. I'm a professional activist at this point. There's no money in activism, but this is what I do full-time, and I don't have a website or anything.
Well, let's point folks at least to OccupyLosAngeles.org, as well as OccupyTheRoseParade.org, because that's what's going on this Monday. Folks out here in L.A., in the area, come on out, occupy the Rose Bowl Parade. Lawrence Zeese, Cheryl Eichle, thank you very much for everything that you're doing, for coming in tonight, and for standing up for all of us.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. All right, when we come back, your phone calls, 877-520-1150. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Hour number three of your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, all-around swell fellow occupying your airwaves tonight. I'll be here tonight and tomorrow night, and Mike will return Monday after the new year. Monday after the new year. But you got me until then. We're going to get to your calls in a moment. If you want to get in, now is the time. 877-520-1150. Pretty much anything you'd like to talk about. But if you have any thoughts on those occupiers we just had here in studio, Occupy LA, folks who were detained, held for days and days, hours on buses, I'm just appalled. Appalled. 10 days, Lawrence Zeese was held in jail, $26,000 bail, and didn't even want to be arrested. Wasn't volunteering to be arrested, was following all the rules, was held for 10 days in jail. That's your country, people. That's what we have allowed to happen. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Please stop on by the chat room at bradblog.com. It is lively there. It may cheer you up. If it doesn't cheer me up tonight, as I say, this is the third hour of the Mike Malloy Show. This is the hour, by the way, that you folks up there in San Francisco and Oakland may no longer be able to hear after next Monday. I don't know. They're only going to be playing 2 hours of the Mike Malloy Show on Green 960, which will no longer be Green 960. As of Tuesday, it will become KNEW 960, something like that. And they're changing all the programming. The good news is they're leaving a lot of the progressives on our public airwaves in the most progressive city in the nation, San Francisco. But they're also making some strange changes, like they're adding where Stephanie Miller used to be in the morning. And I'm here in broadcasting from her studio. At K-Talk, where Stephanie Miller used to be on in the morning, they're replacing her for now with Glenn Beck. Yes, you heard me correct. They're bringing on Glenn Beck onto the progressive radio station. They're taking Stephanie Miller off from the mornings, and they're moving her to nighttime out on the Pacific Coast, something like 7 to 10, which is usually where Malloy is on the West Coast on Green 960. So Malloy is getting bumped to 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Pacific time instead of live 6 to 9 p.m. as we are now. So I'm glad to be here with you in the last few days, unless something changes up there at the Clear Channel station up in San Francisco, where I know Stephanie has encouraged you to ask them nicely, respectfully, to not to do this or to, restore progressive programming to progressive San Francisco live radio. I joined Stephanie in that request, and I hope you do, because I will miss you guys in San Francisco, and I would miss being on live with you when I'm filling in for Mike Malloy on our public airwaves up in the Bay Area. Also, Tom Hartman is being replaced by a right-wing financial guy, Dave Ramsey, and they're putting Hartman at something like a 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. So there you have it. There's your update. I got a lot of stuff I could still get to, but you know what? This way I won't have to work tomorrow. I'll just use this stuff tomorrow. Let's go to the calls. How's that? Let's go to Josh in Silverdale, Washington. Hey, Josh, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad. How's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going okay. I'm not happy about what happened to these occupiers and this photo ID stuff. This disenfranchising of American voters is really ticking me off. They didn't do it in Iowa, though, where the Republicans run the elections. The Republican primary, Republican caucus up there, no photo ID necessary, even though Republicans set the rules because they lie about voter fraud. Anyway, that's not what you called me about. What's up, Josh?
I just had some constructive criticism for the way you actually handled the Occupy people you just had on the show.
Okay.
And with all due respect, I'm a sympathizer, totally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I feel like you kind of missed an opportunity to really focus on, I think, what turns most people off of the movement is the fact that they feel like the movement is not being specific enough about what it is they actually object to about Wall Street and the political system itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that, you know, this movement is going to die until you know, it starts converting people from other walks of life. I mean, I think right now, you know, you're preaching to the congregation, and they are. And just focusing on these individuals' experience with the police, I just think that, you know, that takes away from the greater issues at stake.
Okay, fair enough. Josh, fair enough. What are those greater issues at stake, as long as you've got the national public airwaves right now?
Okay, well, I mean, I can say that. But I'm actually not there's definitely no Occupy Silverdale, so I'm not a physical participant.
But, that's okay, yeah. What do you feel?
I definitely
don't
represent the movement whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
My point is you just kind of had an opportunity there to have people from the movement actually say what they're about. And what I would say is we're about is actually make it clear to people what is it exactly about, you know, Wall Street that has a pernicious effect on society. And that's things like, you know, obviously, you know, derivatives and the fact that they are the most powerful lobby, you know, in Washington. the fact that, you know, every major media conglomerate has extremely high stakes in the financial industry. So obviously, you know, other than programs like yours, You're not going to get any positive attention from the media, and it's already fading away.
Well, listen,
the movement is just going to die.
Okay, well, I hear
start to convert.
Okay, you know? I hear you, Josh, and let me and I appreciate your thoughts and your criticisms here. The reason that I wanted to bring them on, for what it's worth, good idea or not, but you know, yes, the issue of income inequality, of the corporate takeover of our nation, of our government, and everything else, those issues obviously need to be discussed. A lot of those people are trying to discuss that on the corporate airwaves, but a lot of what the occupation is about, I believe, at least in my opinion, is about accountability and the fact that you've got a government that is, you know, corporate controlled and working for the oligarchy, that you've got police, LAPD, police, NYPD, Oakland PD, UC Davis, you know, who believe they can forget about the Constitution. They can throw the Constitution out the window. They can throw the rule of law out the window. They can do anything they want to anybody. And they don't have to worry about it because the corporate media is not going to report it, is not going to report when they mistreat people the way that they do. And I think it's important to tell those stories. But listen, I hear you. If I was on the air every day, 3 hours a day, I'd be telling these stories, all of these stories constantly. But I know that nobody has really told the story of the mistreatment of the folks at Occupy LA. So I hear you. And we have spent a lot of hours on this show when I've been sitting in talking about what the occupiers are occupying for. I hope to do more in the future. But this was, I think, an important story to get out. Even though I do take your criticism in the way it was intended.
Can I make one constructive comment directed towards the Occupy movement itself?
You can indeed. Go, Josh.
They need a candidate. I mean, obviously, it's a nonviolent movement, so overthrowing the government is not an option. You need to do what the Tea Party is doing, and you need candidates running for office who are sympathetic and whose constituency consists of the people who believe in the Occupy Wall Street movement, and that has not happened. One, I'm not aware of one candidate who is running for office or in office mm-hmm. who is seriously advocating the same ideas espoused by the Occupation Wall Street movement.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it. Well said. By the way, Buddy Romer, guy who's running on the Republican side for the Republican presidential nomination, he's been very sympathetic to the Occupy Wall Street folks, the only presidential candidate that I have seen who has done that. And he's been out there telling people to, in fact, pay attention to these occupiers. He's been out there visiting and everything else. Not endorsing him, but Buddy Romer, former governor of Louisiana, trying to get onto the debates on the Republican ticket, trying to get that nomination. Buddy Romer,
well,
okay.
I tried,
by the way, I tried to get him on the show this week, and he was booked up. He was not able to. I'd love to have him. But anyway, he's paying attention. You're right. I wish more Democrats were, and I wish the occupiers were occupying electoral politics and putting up their own people. I got to get to a break here, Josh. I appreciate your call and your critiques along the way. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, 877-520-1150. More of your calls straight ahead on your public airwaves. While we still have them, please occupy them. Also, stop by bradblog.com where you can occupy the chat room. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned.
Say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings.
Yeah. Welcome back. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. In for Mike, and we're taking your calls at 877-520-1150. And I'm happy to say that Jonathan Martin at Politico is reporting today that every ballot counted, cast and counted at the Iowa caucus on Tuesday will be, this is in Iowa. At the caucus, they're going to be counted publicly at each caucus site. Each slip of paper will be taken to a table and counted in the open by hand, with campaign representatives allowed to stand directly around the tabulator counting the votes in the presence of everyone. The vote totals are announced and recorded on an official form provided by the Republican Party of Iowa. The form is signed by two separate caucus officials who were previously elected by the members of the assembled body. That's 1,774 caucus sites are all going to count ballots by hand in next Tuesday's Iowa caucus. So that's good news. They're then calling them into a secret location, an undisclosed location, because the Republicans are concerned they're going to be disrupted by occupiers or anonymous or whatever nonsense. But so there you go. Occupy the Iowa caucuses, 1,774 sites. Find out what the results are then and there when they count publicly. You don't, by the way, you can participate without even having a photo ID, because Republicans don't care about voter fraud. They just don't want Democrats to vote in regular elections. But for the Iowa caucus, no problem. But find out what those results are, and it makes it very difficult. This is the most difficult system to game versus, you know, computer voting, optical scan, paper ballot voting, hand-counted paper ballots at the precinct. Is good news. I'm glad they're going in that direction. Let's go to Helen in Virginia, Minnesota. Is that what that is, Helen?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Helen, welcome to Mike Malloy. What's on your mind?
Brad.
Yeah.
Did I hear right that Glenn Beck is replacing Stephanie Miller?
You did. You heard that correctly. Glenn Beck is replacing. They're going to, as of next Tuesday, I believe it is, Tuesday morning, they're going to put Glenn Beck. Clear Channel is programming Glenn Beck onto a progressive radio station in San Francisco.
I'm speechless. I hope people call in and refuse to do anything with the sponsors and boycott the sponsors around Glenn Beck's programming.
I hear you, Helen. Who are you listening to the program over right now?
I listen to KTFN.
KTNF, the great KTNF up there in Minnesota. Yes.
Online. I'm originally from Minneapolis, and that's always been my radio station.
One of our great independent stations. Janet, the owner up there, we love her.
Yeah.
And thank God she's there and that you guys have actual independent radio over our public airwaves. Appreciate the call, Helen. I got to run.
Thank you, Brett.
All right. Thank you. Okay, let me go to John in. Do I have time? Yeah, John in Los Angeles. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, John. What's up?
Hi, Brad.
Hey.
I published a little newspaper called Changelinks in LA, and I was down at the
Called what?
Changelinks.
Changelinks in LA? Yeah. Okay.
It's a progressive newspaper in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I was down there a number of times. I wasn't down there that night.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to get arrested.
Right.
And I knew they were going to arrest the media anyway.
Right.
But one thing left out is they were arresting people blocks away. People that were walking on the street had nothing to do with Occupy.
Yeah.
They got arrested.
Yeah. That's what Lawrence said. Lawrence Zeis, who was in here in studio, he said that he was two blocks away. And I've heard this story from a lot of people, not just from him, from a lot of different sources, said, you know, they were blocks away. They were following the directions. Cops said, stay on the sidewalks. You won't be arrested. And then they were pulled off the sidewalks and arrested.
Now, these were people that were downtown for other reasons and got arrested.
Yep.
And a young man from Occupy the Hood was roughed up at Pershing Square, which is blocks away.
Yep.
And one of the things, one of the things, all these tactics around the country are suppressing have been the same. Have been the same weapons they were using, the pepper spray.
Mm-hmm.
There's been reports of meetings between mayors and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm of the opinion this is a national effort to suppress Occupy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Homeland Security was involved. And, and I would guess that the corporations were making a lot of noise and rackets about closing these people down. And then we saw it swept across the country. Same tactics. Same pepper spray was used.
Yep. Well, we can't have people out there exercising, peacefully exercising their right to free speech. Not in these United States. And if they do, if they dare to, then we've got to lie about them. We've got to say they were violent and then pepper spray them, jail them for days. It's absolutely appalling. And I've said it before. I'll say it again. Every Tea Partier listening to me ought to be furious at the big government tyranny that has been exercised against peaceful demonstrators here in America in the Occupy movement. It is absolutely outrageous. All right, more of your calls straight ahead. Brad of Brad Blog, in for Mike, 877-520-1150. They're your public airwaves. Use them now.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you.
So you have to play this next week on Green 960 because Malloy won't be heard until like 2 a.m. in the morning. welcome back. It is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Taking your calls now at 877-520-1150. Occupy your public airwaves, please. Let's go to Marianne in Sonoma. Hey, Marianne, welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up?
Well, thank you, Brad. First of all, these peaceful activists, why don't they go to Washington, D.C. and activate of their protests at all the congressmen's offices and stay there, and also Washington, D.C.
Yeah, they do. Marianne, Marianne?
Yes?
Okay, first turn on your radio a little there. But secondly, they do. They have been occupying, there's two different occupations in D.C. They have been there occupying for months and months.
Every office?
Every office?
Yes.
Well,
every congressman's office.
They have done, they can't actually go into every office of security at the Capitol.
Outside,
but
they're,
they are.
Every office.
They
and
have
also
been.
Also the president of the United
They
States.
Have been. They have been in front of the White House. They've been there for months. You don't know about it because the crappy corporate media is not reporting what is going on. They have been there for months.
And the president of the United States, when he was campaigning, he said he was anti-war. He was going to do something with the CEOs. He was going to do something with the lobbyists. And he was going to be transparent. And he did none of that.
Well, Marianne, again, yes.
His name for Obamacare, which 70% of the people did not want. They wanted jobs, jobs, jobs.
Okay, Marianne. All right, Marianne, I appreciate that.
It
turned down Marianne for 1 second. Marianne, health care was absolutely one of the top issues that he ran on and that people wanted. Secondly, he didn't. Hang on, Marianne. Let me just respond, okay? Also, he said he ran. He said he was going to expand the war in Afghanistan. I'm not defending him one way or another. I'm just telling you that's what he did. He ran on that, and that's what he did. And he said he was going to shut down the Iraq war, which sort of, kind of, by and large, he has.
He took the same date that Bush took for terminating the Iraq war, and he said he was anti-war. Anti-war means you're not adding more troops to Afghanistan.
He said he was going to expand the Afghanistan war. Now, if you don't like him, you don't like the fact that he's expanding the war. I know I don't. I know that he has expanded on George Bush's foreign policy. I think it's horrific. I know that he has assassinated U.S. citizens without due process, which I think is appalling. But let's just be clear.
He was going to take care of them. He did nothing. What about the lobbyists? He said he was going to take care of them. He did nothing.
I don't know that he said he was going to take care of them. But
he said he'd not take care of them, but he was going to investigate it.
Right.
He didn't do any investigating. Nobody is out there.
Okay.
And that's what these people are protesting against, and they should be outside every office they could be.
And they are.
Corroding the streets. What are they doing corroding the streets?
Corroding the streets, Marianne? Corroding the streets.
Causing a lot of trouble, and they're causing the cities
Thanks,
lots
Marianne.
Of money that we don't have.
Okay, I appreciate that, Marianne. I wish you knew what the hell you were talking about on any of the points you made. I tried to let you make them, but you really don't know what you're talking about there. All right, let's go to Alma in Albuquerque. Hey, Alma, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Actually,
do you know what you're talking about? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, I wish she could have made her point.
Yeah.
I'm known by TJ, but I wanted to say that I've been going over my donations at the end of the year, and I will not support 960 regressive radio. I will never give them any money. I've been looking for independent radio truth tellers. And that's what I'll do. I think, Fox was, it got rid of that for an excellent reason. He's toxic. He's like a sociopath.
Yeah, he's a crazy, crazy liar. He's a crazy liar.
Yeah. And I think, was it Malloy who said ignorance is stupidity, eternal stupidity or something?
I'm not sure what he said. I was going to go with this. Ignorance is Beck. How's that?
Well, I would love to think that it's repairable or teachable.
Yeah.
But I have a cousin who went from Republican to Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Republican all her life. And she voted for Obama. And then when the Occupy started, she said, I don't know what they're about. And I just, my jaw dropped. I didn't know what to say, but I know what to say now.
What do you say?
They're about everything that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she went from a different income bracket.
Mm-hmm.
She always complained about, I don't have a good job, I don't make enough money, my kids. And now she's like oblivious So I don't really have a comment.
Just, you know, read the signs. Read the signs. They're all holding up signs at these occupations.
Yeah.
You know, we are the 99%. It's about accountability. Get the money out of, you know, out of our government, out of our elections. Restore income equality, which has gone crazy. There's no mystery. Anybody who says they don't know what Occupy is about, what their message is, is frankly, is a liar.
That is so true.
That's it. Oh my,
I'm so disappointed.
I got to run.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in. And if you're looking for somebody to support, MikeMalloy.com.
Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, that's right.
There's so many.
All of them.
Thank you so much, Brad.
Thanks for supporting Progressive Media. Really appreciate it, Alma. All right. Happy New Year to you. And let me get to Jim in. Oh, here we go. Jim in Vegas. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Jim, what's up, brother?
Oh, not much. How you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How can I help you?
Example about the whole ID thing for voting and stuff. It's like, all right, like I have an employee ID, right? Now, let's suppose I decided to rob a bank.
Yeah.
Now, on the employee ID, it says not valid as an ID card. But if I drop that, my employee ID is I'm making my getaway.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good chance they consider that as evidence that I robbed the bank.
Because, right, right. But what exactly is your point?
My point is, if it's good enough to get me arrested for robbing, shouldn't it be good enough for me to vote?
To vote. Okay. Well, that's sort of a backdoor way of making that point. But, yeah, of course it should be. Look, there's all kinds of, you know, I hear this from Progress. I was on TV the other night with Tom Hartman, who I love. He's a great guy. But even he was referring to these as voter ID bills. Voter ID is not a problem. Most states have voter ID, where you can show any, you know, dozens of types of IDs, whether it's your driver's license, a bank statement, your pay stub, your voter registration card, which they sent to you. That's fine. But it's this very narrow, very strict photo ID restriction, state issued photo ID that cannot be expired, that must be at the address that you live. So good luck, you know, moving, this month and trying to vote next because you're screwed. This is meant to keep you from voting, period. End of story. And if it wasn't meant to keep you from voting, then the Republicans, when they're controlling their own Iowa caucuses up there, they would institute photo ID, but they don't because they don't want to tick off any of their own voters. They want to make sure that they, all the Republicans, can vote. And you know what? One other lie that, Jim, while I got you here, because this drives me crazy.
Or you need an ID to get on an airplane. You need an ID to get a pack of cigarettes or a beer.
No, you don't. The airlines are not about to tell millions of Americans they're not allowed to fly. No, you don't need a photo ID to get on a plane. It makes it easier, but they have made accommodations for those people who don't have them. Beer and cigarettes, why I've been buying them for decades. I can't remember the last time I was asked for a photo ID. Finally, those things are privileges. They're not rights, like voting. Voting is a right that is not to be infringed upon unless you hate the U.S. Constitution and you hate the rule of law. Anyway,
right.
You touched me off there, Jim. All right.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Jim. Happy New Year, my friend. Jim in Vegas. I got to go to Vegas soon. Let me go to Steve. Do I have? Yeah, Steve in Salinas. Salinas. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Steve.
Thank you. It's Salinas, California.
Salinas. Yes, it is.
Yeah, and a couple of things. One, about the voting, we need to do, three things now, plus the ID stuff.
Yep.
If we could have publicly financed campaigns.
I'm with you.
And that wouldn't be that difficult because the airwaves belong to the people.
Yep.
So all radio and TV stations could be required to give X amount of free minutes to all qualified candidates.
Boom, I'm in there with you. That's one.
Or else? Or at least give the candidates the choice.
Yep.
To go so people who don't have money can still get some airtime.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. That's one of your three. What else you got? Because I got to get to a break.
Instant runoff voting so we can choose who we want to win rather than against who we want to lose.
Hang on, Steve.
Hand-counted paper ballots.
Hand-marked paper ballots.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. That's exactly what they use in the Iowa caucuses. I'm there with you on that. There with you on public financing of election. Instant runoff voting, terrible idea. Horrible nightmare. We can't add one plus one in this country, much less add the complicated math that comes with ranked choice voting. So anyway, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right, Steve?
Well, I think 3 out of 3 is better.
3 out of 3 is better, but trust me, I've been looking at this for years, and whenever anybody tries instant runoff voting, they get rid of it within a year or two because it's such a disaster because nobody knows who won and who lost. It's a nightmare, and I hope they get rid of it up there in San Francisco. It's just a horrible idea. But I used to be in favor of it until I found out how it really works and so forth. Steve, so I'm 2 for 3 with you tonight at least.
Okay.
Thanks, brother.
I'll give you this time.
Have a good new year. Okay. Let me take a quick break. Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. 877-520-1150. Try to get to everyone if I can. And I will be back with you tomorrow night for all the stuff we didn't get to tonight. And the crazy Iowa caucus circus continues. You know what? Let everyone else talk about that stuff. It's crazy. It's crazy. They've got a bunch of insane candidates that their own party hates. It's rather amusing, though, ain't it? Brad, in from Mike Malloy. One more segment. Stay with us.
It's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Yes, my thanks tonight to our producer, Desi Doyen. Our engineer, Tony Sorrentino. Thank you, Tony, here at K-Talk AM 1150. Stephanie Miller for allowing me to use her studio, as usual. Also, my thanks to my guest, Spencer Mills, otherwise known as Oak Faux Show. Cheryl Eichley and Lawrence Zeiss, occupiers and heroes all. And also to, I want a special shout out to Occupy Freedom LA. You can check her out at OccupyFreedomLA.org. And CrossX Bones over at Ustream. Both two great citizen journalists who helped us track down some occupiers to bring on the show here today, as well as our own Jeannie Dean, who happens to be up here in the studio with us tonight. So, Jeannie, thank you for helping out both here and booking guests and back in the bradblog.com chat room. If you missed any portion of our program tonight, I will have it up at late night at bradblog.com, and you can or you can listen to the podcast over at mikemalloy.com if you have a subscription, which I hope you do. Support Progressive Radio, please. Thanks. Also, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in. I'll be in with you tomorrow night as well. They'll be back on Monday. All right. Let's see if we can get through a few more calls here. Ron in Prescott, Arizona. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Malloy Show, sir.
Good evening, Brad.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to comment that it looks as though the GOP bigwigs are scared to death that Ron Paul is going to win Iowa and possibly win New Hampshire. And I think they're going to rig New Hampshire to give it to Mitt Romney to knock Paul down.
New Hampshire would be really, really easy to rig. We may have Bev Harris on from Black Box Voting tomorrow night to talk about what both she and I went through. And Jeannie Dean, actually, I think. Yeah, Jeannie was up in New Hampshire. Who's in our hallway now, but she was in New Hampshire in 2008. The mess that went on there where they only in 40% of the towns do they hand count paper ballots. Otherwise, they throw them through a Diebold op scanner that drops votes that's programmed by a criminal company with a criminal background named LHS. Easy to rig. Iowa caucus, not so easy because the Republicans have promised to hand count paper ballots in front of the people. Imagine that. So we'll see.
But I think it'll be like 2008 when they rigged the New Hampshire primary to give it to Hillary over Obama when he was clearly in the lead by 10 percentage points on the polls.
It's easy to do. That's all I can say. Yeah. It's easy to do. And they might do it, although, frankly, I don't know that they like Mitt Romney much better. I got to run, Ron. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, brother. Let me get to Karen in Oxnard, California. Hey, Karen, welcome to the Molloy Show. What's up?
Yes, I am here, and thanks so much for filling in for Mike. I enjoy Mike's show, and I always am so thankful when you fill in for him.
You're kind.
And the reason that I'm calling is to ask you a question.
Yeah.
We have Rocky Anderson of the Justice Party who is trying to run for president.
Right. Former mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yes, he is.
Right.
And I really admire him, and I'll be really quick here. But in California, we need to get him on the ballot. I want your advice. Because right now, it looks like the Justice Party ballot is not a traditional petition.
Yeah.
So instead of having people going out on the streets and collecting signatures, it looks like people in California, if they want to vote for Rocky Anderson, must change their voter registration to the Justice Party.
Well, that doesn't make any sense at all. Why would they have to change their registration to vote for him? That doesn't make any sense. To get him to get the Justice Party on the ballot, you know, I don't know how to do it. I don't know what the process is to get a new party on the ballot in California. I would suspect it's easier, and I'm surprised Rocky Anderson didn't take this route. He's a very progressive guy, even as he was the mayor of Salt Lake City, very progressive guy. Why he didn't run, and he still could, for the Green Party or for Peace and Liberty Party, any of these other parties that are already on the ballot and will be on the ballot in the presidential election. That seems to make a lot more sense than getting a new party on the ballot, as far as I can tell.
Well, I tend to disagree with you there because I am a progressive, and I've been a registered Democrat for many years, but I am looking for something new. I don't see that the Green Party keeps the momentum going, and I am looking toward Rocky Anderson, and I was just calling you for any advice that you might have.
Well, like I say, I don't know the process to get a candidate. I have to look it up to get a candidate on the ballot for a presidential election. And the reason I said Green or any other party is because I think that will be an easier route to getting not just on the California ballot, but on a whole bunch of ballots that the Green Party is already on, rather than having to get the Justice Party on every single ballot.
We'll see, because I think that many occupiers, as I am, I'm an occupier in Oxnard, California. I think that many occupiers across the country will be interested in somebody like Rocky Anderson.
I got you.
And
thank
you very much for your time.
I appreciate it, Karen. Thanks for making your democracy work for you. I'm out of time, but let me give it to Tim from L.A. Tim, you got 10 seconds, brother. I'm sorry to give you such short shrift here tonight. What's up in 10 seconds?
Hey, no problem, Brad. Well, actually, we could, Occupy LA or even in California could file a lawsuit against the cities under California Civil Code 52.1, which means that you could basically sue each individual who is responsible for the removal of any occupier $25,000. So if there was 3,000 people involved, that's $75 million per person.
I think we're going to see, Tim. I'm up against the clock here, Tim. I think we're going to see a lot of lawsuits against the LAPD for what they did, and it ought to be the case, and it's going to end up costing the city a lot of money. I will be back with you tomorrow night, Brad Friedman. Until then, you can find me at bradblog.com. Good night.